Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Was that the Andrew Wiggins game? Can we bill something actually as the Andrew Wiggins game? I think we can. That might have been the Andrew Wiggins game last night. It felt like one of the most high-stakes poker games of the entire NBA season. The Warriors and Suns both wanted it. And in a night where inefficiency seemed to define what the Golden State Warriors were doing, they closed with ruthless efficiency on the way to saying, so long, Phoenix, a night after beating Utah. Those are pretty good wins stacked on top of each other. And wow, that was an awful lot of fun. Ray, how about it?
It's either that or the game he had at Memphis when he had 40.
Yeah.
That's the other one that just jumps out. But it's more the fact that with Curry essentially taken out of the game because Phoenix made it clear what they wanted to do, it's that more than one guy stood up. Because if it was just Wiggins, I don't know if they win the game. But they still get the 10 rebounds and 11 assists from Green. They still get 17 from Bazemore, and they get a very useful evening out of Toscano Anderson. They got 30 quality minutes out of him. So basically, I don't know if it was the Wiggins game as much as it was the game where Curry was not there, but several other guys stood up because one guy alone wasn't going to beat Phoenix.
Draymond gets his 30th career triple-double. The Golden State Warriors are now 29-1 when Draymond Green records a triple-double. So whatever that means, go get more of them because apparently good things happen. When he does that, and I'll tell you, you know, why do you watch sports is a question that if you went out and you asked 100 people that question, you might get 100 different answers. And depending on what's the last thing they saw, someone might have an answer that is different today than it was yesterday. There's a lot of things that I love about sports, that I love watching materialize in front of my eyes. The growth of a franchise year over year, the growth of a player throughout their career, how quickly a team can make a move, a decision, and either have its fortunes rise or fall with that decision. I love that about sports. I love team building. I love watching it come together. And I love, Ray, watching guys get better in real time. We're doing that with Juan Toscano-Anderson and with Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole last night got real minutes in a real situation, in a real game that mattered, and he nailed it. He really did. That's the biggest shot of his professional career. He passed his biggest test, and because of that, I think a coach will now be, you know, more rewarding to him, leave him in some situations that he might have not left him in. He's earning minutes, he's getting better, and he is among the better draft picks this team has made since what? They drafted the big three? I mean, he's better than Damian Jones, he's better than Festus Ezeli, he's making a contribution. What he wasn't giving you last year, he is giving you at the end of this year.
He's in the eight-man rotation, and everybody screamed about the eight-man rotation because there's only eight of them. There isn't a ninth in this setup, but No, they found a way to want him to have 20 minutes a game. And I think by and large, anybody who thought about Jordan Poole at the beginning of the year would not have said that 20 minutes is what he should get. They would have thought that's probably excessive. But now it's sort of the standard for him. And I think that's exactly what he is. He's not a 30-minute-a-game guy, but he's in the eight, which it probably is. That's probably his zenith here. And I think he might still be in the eight next year when Thompson comes back.
It's fine that he's there. Be that guy. They need that guy off the bench.
Yeah.
You know, is he oversold as a six? Maybe.
He's definitely oversold as a six.
Is he undersold as an eight? Maybe. But the point is, he does belong in an NBA's top eight rotation right now. He has earned those minutes, and it's fun to watch it actually click. Remember, this guy was catching a D-League assignment in the middle of this year. And last night, again, he knocked down as big of a shot as you're going to see Jordan Poole make so far in his NBA career.
Poole the screen. Curry to Poole. He's open. It's a three ball, and it's nothing but the bottom of the net. And the Warriors take a three-point lead. 116-113 with a minute 42 left.
The end of that game was so fun. We will go through the minute-by-minute report and tell you how it unfolded. It was great to watch last night. It was great to hear on the radio. And I'm ready for some playoff basketball. There is no doubt it's going to feel like playoff basketball, even in the play-in tournament. And we are going to get an awful lot out of the Warriors and that sound last night. So we are looking forward to getting into all of that. We're also looking forward to the 49ers taking a first look at their NFL schedule completely at 5 o'clock. The NFL is going to be releasing the full slate. I think we got a 1-0 start. As a matter of fact, I feel really good about a 1-0 start for the 49ers. They are at Detroit. They are right now the biggest favorite on the board in Las Vegas at 7.5 against Detroit. Apparently, they're going to be heading to Philadelphia in week two. So 2 weeks on the road to start the year for the 49ers. A week three game against the Packers has been teased. David Lombardi says that he might have the inside dope on that one. And we'll get the rest of the schedule a little bit later on. We'll see who's bold enough to trickle out information as they try to find it. But we'll have the whole thing coming up at 5 o'clock. Ray, Kyle Shanahan against Dan Campbell in his first career game. That sounds like a coach undressing to me. I love the 49ers in week one. I know you love the NFL schedule. Would you please break that down for me, what you think the second quarter of that game will feel like?
I think I might take the 7.5 only because I think the 49ers are probably going to try to sort of do things that, you know, I don't think they need to establish they can beat Detroit by 30. That said, it's another year where you just look at the first 3 weeks and you just say, if the Packers don't have Aaron Rodgers, it means that for the third year in a row, the 49ers have a very easy schedule starting the year. And that gets tougher as the year goes on. Because the last 2 years, that's what that schedule's been. Heavily front-loaded. Last year, they couldn't do anything about it because they didn't have any players. The year before that, they went 8-0 and then 5-3 in the second half. So we'll see what weeks 4 through 17 offer. But just off the bat, Detroit's not very good. Philadelphia is not very good. And the Packers have a chance to be not very good. If Rodgers plays and he's willing to grin and bear it, that's a tough game. If he's not there, that team's in deep trouble.
Isn't that exactly the start that Jimmy Garoppolo is kind of looking for? An easy entry. Don't make me ski down K2 on my first run down the slopes. Give me a little bit of a bunny hill start. And I think that that's a real nice entry point for Jimmy Garoppolo, who, let's face it, is two consecutive incompletions away from having Twitter say, "Where's Trey Lance?" As stupid as that is, it's going to happen.
Well, Twitter can go to hell on that.
And a lot of other things.
Yeah. But I think Dan Campbell might be the kind of guy who, while the Lions won't be much better, they'll be better defensively. So I don't know that Detroit is necessarily the gimme for Garoppolo. I think Philadelphia might be the gimme for Garoppolo. But it's still a hell of a lot better than starting with the Ravens, which is what Las Vegas is doing. At least it's a defense that has to get dramatically better, and it might. But, yeah, if you're going to pick a team and it can't be Jacksonville, yeah, Detroit would be fine.
You'll take it. Look, there are no easy road wins in football, except for maybe that one in Detroit that's waiting for you.
the thing about Dan Campbell is that he might
He might bite your knees, Ray.
He might, but he's going to have to fly out here to do it. He might sort of reinvigorate the team on the defensive side because that's who he is. And that's got a short shelf life, but it could start okay. I mean, you get guys who, you know, have been beaten down, but it's a new year with a new guy who's a defensive guy. And they might just respond to that for a while because, after all, his predecessor, an interim guy removed, was Matt Patricia, who everybody hated.
Right. They quit on him halftime week one.
So he might get some benefit of the doubt early and might get some pretty good performances early because of that. That's why Detroit I'm not sure about. They might still be bad, but they might be a different kind of bad.
Here's why you got to love the NFL schedule. It might even offer a little hope for the Detroit Lions, according to Ray Ratto. Well, we got an awful lot today.
Take the 7.5. I'm just telling you, 6 months before the game is played.
Stone cold, lead pipe lock, lay
absolutely,
it now.
Absolutely, yeah.
Liquidate all assets on Lions week one.
Kids pay for their own college when this one.
We got an awful lot for you today. Our morning show had Dave Cavill on, president of the Oakland A's. It was a better interview than it was a performance by the interviewee. We are going to hear that sound. We have an awful lot, like Ray said. The Raiders have their first game of the year, a date with the Ravens on Monday Night Football. I got some other information about Allegiant Stadium some people here might be interested in. The Warriors last night absolutely took a first step towards, hey, this matters, lean forward, pay attention, basketball. Those are two really good wins back-to-back. It might buy everyone a night off on Friday with a big game against Memphis scheduled for Sunday, like a monster truck rally. We got an awful lot for you today. The NFL schedule live at 5. Brian Scalabrine in our 3 o'clock hour. Anthony Slater in our 4 o'clock hour. And it's great to have you here today. Damon Ratto. Kolsky still on a little paternity leave, and we'll be back in the building, I believe, next week. In the meantime, we're brought to you by MB Jesse Painting. Are you in need of quality painting? MB Jesse offers the most trusted painting services in the Bay Area. Their experts have been helping in the Bay Area for over 25 years. Visit mbjesse.com. That is mbjesse.com for a free quote today. MB Jesse Painting, Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Backdoor lob. Wiggins catches and slammed. All Bridges could do was watch. Curry with a steal. Curry on the break. Takes it middle. Draws a crowd. Now waits. Wiggins spins on Ayton. Goes up with a banker and kissed it home. Low left. The Warriors lead by 5 with a minute 21 to go. And Monty Williams has to call a timeout. There's something about this Warriors squad. There's a grit to it that they have discovered late in the season. And I haven't said this in over a year. Chase is rocking.
Are you telling me there's like a hip-hop version of Here Comes the Sun? It's information to me. I did not know that.
I think that's...
It's your remix.
You have nothing else to do during the day?
Yeah.
Just know.
I think the team is better than this. Deserves better than this. But I'll say this.
It does have that cat in a blender feel.
It does really have.
So for those who don't know, that was a popular song during the We Believe era. That was like the Warriors anthem.
Define popular, because I don't remember it being the
My answer. Friends and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, so that's the standard. You and two guys sitting on a park bench decided that was a hit.
We can play it again later. Let us know.
Only if you want your legs broken.
I can't wait. Pump It or Dump It a little bit later on today. Hey, that's FM radio, right? Hey, you guys want to hear that new song, Pump It or Dump It, right now? Go ahead, give us a call. 888-957-9570.
The show's not getting off to a great start for me.
Well, I'm sorry.
Warriors. We don't want that song again.
Warriors weren't off to a good start last night. I want to give you a nice, smooth segue back into reality. The Warriors last night, I'll tell you, there were a few things about that game that made it particularly interesting. Obviously, the team finally picked up Steph on a bad night for Steph and won. And they did it against a very good team. And they did it against a very good team that was at its full strength. And beyond that, Ray, what I think made that game, place it in the, it counts twice as much as a normal win. Devin Booker wanted that game. Chris Paul wanted that game. The Phoenix Suns wanted that. That wasn't one where they let go, didn't, you know, see it through to the very end. That was highly contested. That was a really good game between two teams. I mean, that I don't mean to sound like Tim Roy here, but that's NBA basketball. I mean, that was professional, really good, well executed in the last few minutes of a game where the Warriors got the Suns to make a couple mistakes. Chris Paul turnover, the Devin Booker turnover, and they were giving away possessions when they couldn't afford to give them away, and the Warriors actually hit consecutive shots.
The Warriors committed 8 turnovers last night, which is about as careful as they can be with the ball.
Yep.
But the thing that jumped out at me more than anything else was points in the paint and second chance points, which means you're rebounding. 62-32 Warriors. And second chance points, 29-12. The Warriors basically beat the hell out of a team on the boards. And a team with DeAndre Ayton. That's the thing. When the Warriors had to go down low to get baskets, they got them. You know, when they had to attack the basket rather than sit at the arc, they did it. I mean, they threw up 40 threes, and they only made 11 of them. So to get 122 means you got to get them from in close. And they did that. You know, and it doesn't look like they did if you just look at Looney's final number or Toscano Anderson's final number. But they attacked the Suns. And because the Suns were so focused on trying to keep Curry corralled, they didn't have enough people to handle that part of it. So it was really smart coaching adjustment and really good execution of that adjustment.
They weren't a great defensive team, the Warriors, all night. But when they needed to be a really good defensive team, they turned it up. And look, it's that time where if the Warriors are going to be taken seriously as a playoff team that could maybe advance a round. I mean, because you can't talk about an 8 or 7 seed beyond just winning a first round matchup, because even that feels like a long shot and it's a big ask. But there is no doubt that the supporting cast performance you saw last night, you'd think at any point in time you put that against a normal Curry performance, okay, the team that couldn't win a series could. The team that isn't going to win more than 2 games, I think, looks at 3 wins. And if you're looking at 3 wins, why not a 4th in any series? Andrew Wiggins playing like that, as we said, I don't want to steal your line, Ray, because we talked about this before we went on the air. But if Andrew Wiggins played like that, he's still a Minnesota Timberwolf. he shows up and gives you a week of performances that just echo, not mirror what you saw last night, but just echo what you saw last night. All of a sudden, the Warriors are a massive, you need 4 aspirin headache for even a 1 or a 2 seed.
And the night before, Wiggins wasn't there. I mean, he had a very difficult game. And that's the thing that I think still gnaws at people, that offensively, he can be really, really good. He can be really, really bad, or he can sit about in the middle. And you're not really sure what you're going to get from night to night. What you do get is defense, because the Warriors are now, they're not the Knicks of the Western Conference. That's probably still the Lakers if they're healthy, but they're a hard out because Phoenix normally 116 is just normal for them. And even at that, you know, while they shot well, they didn't get a lot of shots off, you know, and normally they'll get more than 79. They'll be in the low 90s. And the fact that they couldn't get shots off on a night when they didn't have a lot of turnovers either suggests, if nothing else, that the Warriors made it hard for them. Booker got his, Paul got his, but nobody else really did. Nobody else really hurt them.
Here's a segment that probably nobody thought was coming today on the show, but Nash, I tell you what, we might even need you for this one here.
Oh, because, God.
Because you are our resident Phoenix Suns fan. Somebody explain to me why Jay Crowder is like a perennial journeyman, like seven teams in 9 years level journeyman, because I only really watch Jay Crowder when he's playing the Warriors. And whenever it feels like, and I didn't check the splits or the stats, I don't even know this. It's just how I feel. Sometimes eyes lie to you. Sometimes they tell you the truth. It feels like Jay Crowder, no matter who he's playing for, what uniform he wears, when he plays the Warriors, he's a really good player. Like, Jay Crowder plays a level of basketball against the Warriors that make me wonder, why is this guy a journeyman? Why is this guy in a new team, in a new city, every single time I see him on a basketball court? He was pretty good last night.
No, he was pretty good. And there are times when you really notice him. There are also times when you can't find him. And I think that's the maddening thing. I mean, last year he was injured. He only played 20 games. Or not 20.
2019.
But, yeah, but last year, you know, he didn't really make a whole lot of a dent in Phoenix, you know. But you noticed him in the bubble when Phoenix finally got its act together.
Right.
He's an ancillary piece, and when he's on, he makes you better.
And I swear to
God.
But
he's not on all the time.
It feels like he turns it on when he knows I'm watching. He might, like, there's when I'm in the audience, Jay Crowder's a borderline all-star.
But, you know, the year before that, he almost didn't play at all in Miami. The year before that, he only played half the season in Memphis and Memphis. And the year before that, in Utah, he had a hard time getting starts.
Yeah.
So there must be something about his game that suggests that he's a guy who, when he's engaged, is really good, but he's not always engaged.
3-and-D, baby. Shoot or shoot. I'll tell you, Jay Crowder's probably the most hit-or-miss player on this Phoenix Suns team. Last night, what, we saw him start 5 of 5 from deep, and he can't hit another 3 the rest of the game. I think Jay Crowder is the guy who he is because he's played in some big moments. I mean, 2 Eastern Conference Finals with the Celtics.
That's right.
He played with LeBron in the finals against the Warriors. And last year in Miami, he had a huge role on that team. He shot out of his mind, and it's the reason that he came to Phoenix to play with Chris Paul, and he's getting paid a lot of money to do so. He's making, I think, $10 million a year just to shoot threes.
Like, inconsistencies aside, how come that guy can't find a job? Or, like, a permanent home, I'm guessing. Why doesn't he get a second contract with a single team?
I think it's a situation where he's always that bargain guy that's going to be a quote-unquote X factor. The Chris Paul addition was huge for the Suns. But the second that they got Jay Crowder on that mid-level exception, all of a sudden everyone was talking about, man, Phoenix just added another huge piece. They're going to be a top-5 team in the West. He's the typical guy that will never get a big deal, but he's always going to get the value deal, and you're going to say, that's the guy that's going to make a difference for this team.
There you go. I guess, yeah, if you're, you know, how can you spend your $10 million to bring in someone to make a difference? Jay Crowder seems to be the right answer over and over again, but
a designated MLE.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, he is just Mr. Mid-Level. It's good. That's a good moniker. That should be his nickname.
Okay, it will be.
Put it on a shirt.
No.
Crowderhead.
Yeah, I mean, he was very good last night, but, you know, again, it's one of those things where if you have to rely on him, you'll get your heart broken. But if other guys are carrying the heavy end of the piano, he'll take the thin end and the stool, and you'll be fine.
Decent player, man. Really is. Last night, the Warriors got decent performances, and they got them from role players, supporting cast, actually supporting the team. What a concept. Here's Steve Kerr.
Jordan was fantastic that second half. We needed his scoring. You know, there were a lot of openings on the floor because of the way they were guarding Steph. So Jordan took advantage of it. Wiggs was amazing. You know, 17 for 23. He hit that huge three late. But that's what I liked, was that guys were just you know, stepping up and taking the big shots that were there and knocking them down. And then, you know, to hold them to 18 points in the fourth quarter was really impressive too. That's a great offensive team. They've got shooting everywhere, very difficult to guard. So just a hell of an effort all in all.
I mean, they got shooting and they got know-how too. Chris, by the way, Chris Paul, what a glorious, beautiful pain in the ass he really has been his entire career.
He's why people are still... The fact that people are talking about him as an MVP candidate, you saw it last night.
Yeah.
And he's been doing that all year. It's just he knows stuff that other people don't know, and he still has enough wherewithal to make a lot of that happen or find somebody who can. That's why, more than anything else, that's why Phoenix is second in the conference. Without him, they're in the playoff, the play-in tournament scene. He's that much. He's that important, and he's been that important on the other teams he's been on in the latter stages of his career. I mean, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer without a ring, which is hard to do.
Very hard to do. Very hard. He really is. He is, and beyond it being ruthless, it's beautiful at times. Like, that guy's got some artistry to his game. Just the command that he has over an offense. And, you know, I'll steal the line from Fitz, who used it last night. That guy's been in charge of any gym he's walked into since the eighth grade. He really has been. That guy walks into a gym with other Hall of Famers who got rings. He's still in charge.
Oh, no, yeah, he makes people get out of his way. And sometimes that can become irksome. But you have to buy his program, because he's not going to buy yours unless it happens to fit in the Venn diagram with his.
It was really, really a great basketball game by two teams who knew what they were doing, had the talent to get it done. And the Warriors, who obviously had the most talent in Steph Curry, as he was having an off night, the supporting cast finally picked up the team. And when that happens, it's easy to say, well, hey, you're peaking at the right time. What does peaking at the right time mean to Draymond Green?
It's very important. You know, we've always talked about you want to go into the playoffs rolling. You know, you don't want to stumble into the playoffs. For us, you know, to get, I think we won four straight now. You know, to get these wins, especially these last two, were huge. And you know, you can take that momentum into the playoffs. So it's good to be playing well right now. But we got to continue to build on it. These last two games are very important.
You have the game's inside elements last night that pointed to the Warriors losing. Devin Booker having just a monster third. Chris Paul, just talking about how good he is and was last night. The two of them absolutely wanted that game. The Warriors, of course, were on a back-to-back. They've been playing in the eight-man rotation for the better part of 3-4 weeks now. Every single thing that means you're probably going to lose tonight was pointed at the Warriors, plus their shooting woes, plus Curry having an off night, and they still did get it done. I didn't expect it. I really didn't. With about 5 minutes left in the game, I thought I knew how that one was going to wrap up, and they just battled, they scrapped, and again, here's Draymond. They used to be the hunted, now they're being the hunters.
For a second there, we were the hunters. Then we turned into the hunted for 5-6 years, whatever it was, and now we're hunting again. That's always a fun position to be in when you're hunting, going after everybody else. So, you know, obviously has experienced both, but I love hunting.
He's full of crap on that. It's much better to be the hunted.
Of course,
yeah.
It is.
He can't possibly convince me that having the best record in the conference isn't quite as good as being stuck in the middle of the play-in fistfight. I mean, yeah, there's more adrenaline now, but it's still not preferable.
I don't know, Ray. Would you rather be the cheater or the gazelle?
What do you think? I mean, it's really very simple. You know, when you're the best team, it's always more fun because you don't have to worry about whether you have to beat New Orleans and then Memphis back-to-back just to get the tiebreaker to be eighth. I mean, yeah, that's fun to watch. This is the best part of the year in a lot of ways, but there's not a chance that that's as much fun as running the table.
Well, they got a little bounce in their step right now. There is no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt, but when everybody, you know, got weird about Kerr talking about what a great year, you know, last year was, you know, just to coach, as opposed to when they were winning a title, which was certifiably nuts, at least on its face. That's the same thing. It's better to be first than eighth. That's all.
Yeah, and look, I don't think that Draymond is up there to give you nonsensical lip service. As a matter of fact, I know we got some people billing this as We Believe 2.0. I don't know if Draymond's really here for that.
I love the We Believe team. You know, Matt B, Stack Jack, BD, all those guys. But they had their thing, and we got ours. You know, the We Believe days are over. Well, I won 3 championships. I'm not part of no We Believe team. And like I said, that's no disrespect to the OGs that came before me. I love those guys, and what they started here is incredible. Jay Rich, Saginaw's finest. You know, no disrespect to them at all, because what they did was incredible. Now, we're not no We Believe 2.0.
That is my favorite Draymond Green answer of the entire year, bar none, because he's so right. And that's the attitude to have. And if the Warriors are to do anything this year, it's that championship pedigree. It's that we are overqualified to just be believers.
We Believe made the playoffs once, and then it broke apart. I mean, We Believe has a place in Warriors' hearts because they didn't make the playoffs the 5 years after they got in, and they hadn't made the playoffs in the 10 years before. So We Believe is basically the oasis for the guy who's been in the desert forever.
Yeah, and it was great.
It was a great one-off. But the thing to remember is they only made the playoffs one time with that, and then everybody found greener pastures. It's under normal circumstances, you wouldn't accept that as good enough, except the Warriors had missed the playoffs for 11 straight years before that year. And it was a year that in February – Don Nelson declared over. They played a game in Chicago. They got beat. He just said, we're done. And then they limped in at 42-40 and won a playoff round.
Because they had the matchup in Don Nelson's back pocket. He knew exactly how to defend Dirk. He knew every tendency. And he had like a lawsuit against Mark Cuban to really fire up the whole thing too.
Well, and Mark Cuban wanted the Mavs to play the Warriors because they had a chance to eliminate the Warriors if they had played the last two games straight. But the lineup they put out against Oakland in game 81, was meant to lose.
Yeah.
That way the Warriors would get the eighth spot, and Sacramento, who ended up ninth, you know, and had like basically only 8 healthy players. I mean, that's the team you want to play.
Yeah. No, they dialed up their own demise.
Yeah. I mean, they basically said, hit me in the throat. And Don Nelson did. Well, Don Nelson and Baron Davis, et cetera, et cetera.
The basketball team as well, yes.
But that's the thing. It's they made the playoffs largely with the connivance of the best team in the conference that year. Otherwise, nobody would remember it.
Well, here's the deal. There's no need, with all due respect to Will Clark and fanciful memories to the 1989 San Francisco Giants, after the 3 world championship parades, who gives a flip about 89 anymore? So you won a National League pennant. Doesn't matter when you win it all. And that's where the Warriors are. The Warriors have graduated from warm, fuzzy memories to championships.
And it should be noted that after the Giants' 3 World Series and the Warriors' 3 World Championships, no earthquake happened. 89, that was kind of ruined about halfway through.
Of course it was.
So, you know, do you really want to sit there and you know, sweep up your roof on your driveway? Or do you just want to have a parade? Those are your choices.
I like the parade. 888-957-9570. Eric in Millbrae. What's going on, Eric?
What's up, fellas? I just want to say I apologize to the Maple Jordan, Mr. Wiggins. Thought he was a bust loafer, but I got to say, man, he's really proven himself. I know he's been up and down at times, but man, he's better defensively, Ken, and he's shown he can be a consistent number 2 for the most part. And I'm really excited to see once Clay comes back, I think he could be a legit number 3. He's better than I thought defensively. And guys, dare I say they're better off without Oubre. I thought the season would be over, but I think guys like Toscano Anderson, Mulder and Poole play their roles better. Oubre is a more ball stopper. He can get his numbers and points, but I think he takes away from the impact of what Curry can do. And I just feel like Curry flows a lot better with these guys in a shorter rotation who play through him instead of, you know, a guy like Oubre who wants to be a chucker. So I want to get your thoughts on that. And without Pascal, do you even want these guys to come back in the rotation? Because it seems like the eight-man rotation is going well. And looks like they're going to have to go 6-0 because Memphis, unfortunately, is staying stride for stride with him. It looks like it's going to come down to the final game of the season. I'll get your thoughts on that. Thanks for it, guys. Excited. Last night was epic. I was glad to be there.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that you were there, too. That's great that you got back in the building for such a great game. That's one that you'll be remembering for a long time. The Oubre conversation is an interesting one. How much of a ball stopper he is, how much of a flow stopper he is, how many shots get wasted on him instead of going to Curry or, you know, Wiggins. Look, Oubre is a little bit of a puzzle. I like him, though, and the choice between having him for the playoffs or not, I'll take him, no doubt. I mean, you need bodies, and you need defense-first players. And that guy gives you a legitimate defensive effort, even as his offense can be questioned at times. Pascal, I wish I could tell you that Pascal meant as much to this team as it looked like he meant at times last year. It's been a disappointing sophomore year from him. However, out of sight, out of mind, that guy can put together a good game. He just has been gone for so long. I'll take the Oubre before I take Pascal. Ideally, you'd have both.
Yeah, if they're going to make judgments off where they are right now, and I can't imagine why they would, Pascal's not really part of the future. They can work around that. But I'm not saying that that's a decision they've made because they don't have to make that decision now. Oubre is the hard one because Oubre is going to come with money.
Right.
Pascal you can basically get for a bag of Tootsie Roll Pops.
More calls. We see you on hold right there. We're coming to you next, 888-957-9570. Pascal, Oubre, who would you want back for the playoffs? Both? One? None? You really want to go into the playoffs with an eight-man rotation? You think that that's a good plan because the Warriors got a little juice? What if I told you Jordan Bell was here to light your candle of hope? It's probably an oversell, but we'll talk about it with you. 888-957-9570 when we come on back, and we'll let you know that Brian Scalabrine is going to be joining us at 5:30. Little White Mamba coming up this afternoon. Damon Ratto and Kolsky brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Turn your mic on, Damon. Wow, that normally doesn't happen to me, but that just happened to me. It's good to be back in the studio. Turn the mic on. Brian Scalabrine coming up at 3:15 here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. No, Kolsky, it's Ray and I, 888-957-9570. You want to join the fun? We'd love to have you. Obviously, there's an awful lot going on locally. The story, Ray, I don't even know if I want to call it a big story because it's just more of the same. From the Oakland A's, who have, you know, basically turned around to Oakland and said it's put up or shut up time. And I don't know if they've got the actual juice to be the muscle in the room. And that is why this whole thing just doesn't make an awful lot of sense. Dave Cavill today was on our morning show. Our morning show tried to ask him questions. He had his talking points more than he had answers for the questions that they were asking him. There was clearly an agenda that Dave Cavill was here to put forward, and that was to place the blame on Oakland City Council.
Well, we're really running out of time. You know, we have a stadium lease here at the Coliseum through 2024. The existing facility is really past the end of its useful life. You know, we're having a hard time keeping the lights on sometimes, and we got the water table issues. And we really need a decision from the City Council if they endorse our vision for the waterfront ballpark. And we've spent about 4.5 years on that, and we're very hopeful that they take a vote in a positive direction this summer.
So, you know, to say that we've got a really urgent stadium issue is almost on its face a lie, because there's no difference to that stadium today than 5 years ago when they had an urgent stadium issue. The amount of twiddling their thumbs on their way to getting anything done absolutely has to be as put on the table as any delay in the bureaucratic process of the good people of the Oakland City Council.
Yeah, part of this is they want to set a fire under the council to get the vote they want. But the other part is that nobody's buying their numbers. I mean, yesterday we talked about it being like 2.6 billion, and the ESPN story got some of that wrong. It's actually about 850 million that the city would have to come up with, but they're talking about economic benefits for it. And so the numbers still don't add up in a meaningful way. And as far as the water table issue goes, part of the problem that the A's have when building the new place is they have a water table issue.
They have a rising oceans issue.
Yeah. I mean, it just Neil DeMaus, who's an expert on stadium stuff, has written about this, that, you know, that Oakland putting a stadium where they are without sort of massive infrastructure, meaning getting it lifted up off the ground, is going to be a mass. I mean, it's a massive outlay of cash that the John Fisher is not going to lay out. I mean, he's worth, and you have to take Forbes' word for this, he's worth about $3.2 billion. A stadium that costs $12 billion, however you do it, is still going to be way beyond his means, which means who's going to be in charge of scaring up that money? Is he going to take on partners? Is he going to take on a bank loan? Is he going to wait for the city to keep coming up with money after the original $850? None of that is answered in any of this. And it seems to me incumbent on the A's to have the detailed plan worked out ahead of time so that even if the city, in a moment of insanity, said, yeah, we'll give you $850 million, would have to know that that's all there is, because it never works out that way. Everybody talks about how the city never put in any money into Pac Bell Park. No, the city put in $100 million in infrastructure costs, and they still pay for security. So that's an ongoing tab that the city's taking on. You know, it's the fine print that kills you. And when you're upfront about a number that you know the city can't make, everything after that is just an insult piled on top of an insult.
Having said all that, though, 24 Willie Mays Plaza is an investment I doubt the city of San Francisco has any regrets about. It is more than paid off. It is more than illuminated the city as a destination for baseball fans everywhere. I would imagine that the ballpark alone, when we had a rampant tourism industry in the summer, represented an awful lot of the people flying into SFO just to come see this beauty. It was officially on the tour. You had to see Wrigley, you had to see Fenway, and you got to go see this ballpark in San Francisco.
I'm not questioning whether the ballpark in San Francisco should exist or not, but the big selling point they always made was it doesn't cost the city a dime. Well, it always costs the city something.
Right.
And it'd be easier to sort of respect that pitch if it had some truth in it. Or if you just said, yeah, the city's coming up with X amount of money for infrastructure around the ballpark, but we're not asking them to build any of the ballpark. At least then you know you're not getting lied to somewhere. Here, the hidden costs are everywhere.
Right. You know what's going on is the person who's got the idea they want to sell you as free of charge to you is looking at the tax revenue and all that San Francisco will be making around it, and then eliminating that from the actual money forward cost of getting it started in the first place or continuing services, like you said, around the stadium. And that's it's how you want to count the beans. And it's not a lie as much as it is the fuzzy math that all businesses put forward when they're trying to make a financial argument of why you can't go wrong investing in this good idea.
But the fuzzy math is the lie, because you're going to fuzz up the math, which means that you can't trust any of the math after that. And that's where they get you. And in terms of this project, when they start talking about economic benefits, those are all guesses that always turn out to be way too high. You know, it just, oh, no, the city will get, you know, more than make its money back. No, businesses around the ballpark did. But it hasn't been the financial windfall for the city as much as it's been not a drain. That's what you can say about the ballpark down the road, is that because the city didn't get hung for the construction costs, That's money that they didn't have to come up with. But in terms of sitting back and profiting off of this, no, they don't, because the lease always gets reworked. There are always tax abatements involved. The city, you know, isn't losing money on the ballpark, and that's as good as you can do. It's not a windfall for the city.
Dave and Cavill.
Yeah. Okay.
No, sorry. Well, so
Dave, no, you're right, but let Dave speak.
Dave Cavill did share this with the morning show in terms of details on how the stadium would be financed.
We are. It's completely privately financed, the entire project. The only revenue that has been kind of mischaracterized as public is actually project revenue that only is generated if the project is built. So there's really no risk to the general fund of Oakland. We have a project that will generate $450 million in community benefits. It's a completely union project, living wage jobs, and you get a privately financed stadium that the city doesn't need to pay for. So we really think it's a winner proposal. We're hopeful that it gains the support at city council so we can get started and get a shovel in the ground as soon as possible.
I think getting a shovel in the ground is the most horrifying thing John Fisher can hear.
They don't want this.
I don't think he knows how to pay for it. So I think it's sort of start it and then start kicking the can down the road until I can find somebody who will buy this. Because ultimately what you're doing is you're taking a franchise that is worth, I don't know what the last Forbes number was, but let's say $1.2 billion. You're adding on top of that a stadium project, which if you're selling, you're not going to end up paying for, which means all of a sudden the thing that you bought that's worth $1.2 billion is suddenly something that you're going to probably have to pay closer to $4 billion to get done. And the Oakland Athletics are not worth $4 billion.
Not even close.
And that's why, ultimately, I still think that Fisher's goal, and I don't know this, but I think Fisher's goal is to sell it or move it to, or sell it to move, to have it moved. Because I don't think he's interested in this anymore. And when Dave Cavill says it's all privately financed, fine, where's the money coming from? Who are these private individuals and companies who are doing this? You know, how about a list?
Right, yeah.
You know, if a list exists, I haven't seen it. But that it's all privately financed thing, that's an alarm bell for me every time.
All right, everybody, let me welcome you real quick to your 3 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 in San Francisco. It's an Odyssey station.
So Bonte and Butcher Boy both asked Dave Cavill several questions about John Fisher. Just stepping into the conversation as an actual physical person. I mean, at this point, don't we almost need like a John Fisher proof of life photo? Like, I feel like I need John Fisher holding up the Oakland Tribune with today's date on it to even believe this guy exists. He is an absolute, he's a ghost. He's a ghost. And I think that this is something that, here's why nobody wants to really do business with the A's. Well, number one, they can't really deliver an audience. And believe me, we as a radio station know all about that. We know all about that. I mean, we, being the flagship station of the Oakland A's, left our sales department an inability to sell airtime.